Hello and welcome back to the Strong Fit Long podcast. This is a new season, season 3, episode 1, and I've got a special guest, Teddy Cox. Now, he worked with Matt Wenning for a decade, so he used to coach me with Matt a long time ago when I was younger. So this episode is all about working with Matt, conjugate system and general populations and coaching, and we'll just kind of chew the fat really. Now, I apologize about the audio quality. This is the first one we've done via Zoom and recorded it. Also, we had a technical difficulty in the middle and then we kind of forgot where we were, so when we got back to it, kind of goes away a little bit. So there's a breakdown in the middle of there. Hopefully it's not too bad, but please enjoy the episode. Cool, okay. So again, thanks for being patient with me, Teddy. I've had quite a few issues with technical stuff. I'm not very good at technicalities, shall we say. So, all right, man. So for those people who don't know, so I kind of know Teddy briefly through the wonderful world of the internet from probably, what, five years ago. COVID kind of skews this, doesn't it? So I was coached by Matt, and obviously, I guess at the time, Matt was starting to come up, starting the one-on-one stuff, and you helped me out a lot when I was lifting and took into the WF World bench and that sort of stuff back in 2019. So that's how long ago it was. So Teddy, tell us a bit about your background, how you got into obviously coaching itself, but my understanding really, man, is you did quite a lot of sports in general at school and at college.
Yeah, so I've always been involved in sports growing up, all the way from little league all the way up to I ended up playing American football at a small Division III school, and I also pole vaulted on track. So I was a dual sport athlete at Division III college. And as I was finishing up there, I studied exercise science, and because I was always passionate about sports, and I was always passionate about being in the weight room, because I always saw it as a way to get better at the sports and ultimately be the best all-around athlete I could be. But towards the end of it, I was studying for a certification called the CSCS, which is through the National Strength Conditioning Association. And I saw Matt Wenning there because he was one of the presenters for this exam prep. And this was at the Arnold Expo here in Columbus, Ohio. So it's kind of funny because when I tell people I met Matt at the Arnold, they're like, oh, you saw him around at the Expo. I'm like, no, I actually saw him at a exam prep.
Oh, wicked. He's done quite a few things. I know Dave Tate's had the Swiss on, and Matt's been presenting that quite a lot, which is, well, I think last year, I think he's there this year as well, I think. For the Swiss, but yeah, so let's go back to that kind of period then. So was Matt presenting a talk at the time? Was it just kind of a meet and greet kind of thing?
No, it was presenting on different topics, but so this it's called an exam prep. So essentially, okay, what the prep encompassed was everything I had learned for the past 4 years in my undergraduate degree. They essentially reviewed that information and was presenting on it to prepare you for this exam you have to take. So the certification requires a 4-year degree, and then you have to take the certification exam. So this was to prepare you for that. And Matt was talking specifically on the biomechanics aspect of the test.
Oh, nice. Okay. So you spent your time with Matt there for how many years with you with Matt down at Ludus Magnus? Yeah. So,
yeah. Nice. Summer of 2012 and left summer of 2022.
Oh, interesting. And then obviously that's when you started a goji? That's how you say it?
A goji.
So, okay.
Fine. I know it's hard to pronounce, but
that's because I'm British, Ted. That's all it is. We just say anything we want.
Hey, you're closer to the old one than I am.
Yeah, well, so those people don't know. So Matt Wenning is quite a high decorated powerlifter. Both Raw and Multiply. During that time when you guys were kind of coaching me, West Side versus the World came out, I think it was. That's 2019, I think, wasn't it? Just before I did the World, I think. And I can't remember when it was. It was a long time. I love watching it all the time. It's a really interesting thing to watch. But Matt had the section on there, and actually, I didn't realize how he had, I'm going to say left, but obviously kicked out by Louis at the time. Mm-hmm. And obviously now Louis passed. And I reckon, I've not spoken to the man. I'm sure you'll know this more than me. Hopefully you guys talk and talk ideas. But obviously, when someone passes away, you've not had a chance to really consolidate. That's the word? Yeah, I think so. To get bygones bigger bygones, I guess. But I guess a lot of people who I've heard from, and you know, Louis, what Louis was, and I think it's a shame, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I think they saw each other since, but you know, so it's a shame. But Matt was and always still is, I guess, a few as well, I'm assuming, someone mm-hmm. to look up to, not only in obviously how strong he was and still is, because he's 44.
Yep.
Yeah, 44. Obviously, he's done that 24 reps with 520 pounds, which is mm-hmm. impressive feat of strength and everything else he's done when he was younger. But I guess for me, and I'm assuming for you because of how we coach, is he's still doing it now in his 40s. You don't get people mm-hmm. like that. I think the biggest thing for me is as a powerlifter still, but you want to be able to do this when you're old, right? Gonna be in your 40s, your 50s, 60s, you know, right up mm-hmm. until your 70s. I competed with a guy who was 82 back in mm-hmm. February. And it's all, I mean, the weights go down, but how mm-hmm. longevity is huge, right? So you're coaching now, Agoji. So your clientele, is that mainly athletes?
It's a little bit of all over. So I have people that are, so I have a power lifter that actually got invited to start training at Elite FTS. John Vance. He just started that recently. I have a lot of general population clients that are trying, and I guess that's what I would say I specialize most in, is probably pain management or trying to avoid pain and promote longevity. Because on top of working for Matt, I've also been working for the Ohio State University Sports Medicine here in nice. Columbus, Ohio. So I got contracted out to high schools, but I also work closely with physical therapists on doing kind of a continuation program after ACL surgeries.
Oh, that's cool.
So I actually dealt with for at least 5 years and still do to an extent, just not specifically. Deal with a lot of patients that, you know, this wasn't intended for the program, but what happened was these athletes would have a surgery, then they go to physical therapy, and the way insurance works with healthcare here in the US,
yeah,
they would run out visitations with the physical therapist, and they go like, okay, well, Teddy, they can't afford to be with the physical therapist anymore, so we're going to hook them up with you in order to progress their therapy back to return to play.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. I didn't know that. Actually, I haven't spoken to you much about this, but yeah, that's interesting.
So it's pretty crazy. So on top of that, I also still work with tactical athletes, and through my work at Ohio State, I currently train a fire department.
Nice. Well, Matt was big at that back in that was going for a long time now, but he had a numerous amount of fire departments from Ohio. And you know what? One of the biggest things I love so much, I'm a big fan of the US and the people who really know me, I are. But I think is, again, I follow a match stuff and the manuals and that sort of thing. But one of the biggest things is not just what he's done for strength athletes. I guess you're following on this and what your work is, but take the idea of longevity and looking at how to help people stay active, not just through kind of regular work and play and that sort of stuff, but in their job roles as obviously emergency departments. You know, obviously here we have a fire department separate to the ambulance, that sort of stuff, but the same thing. And I think the biggest thing about America for me in that essence is they want that to happen. I guess it's more a case of based on insurance, right? So if mm-hmm. if, you know, you lost a firefighter because their back's gone because they're not strong enough to lift a, you know, the average person. I think one of the Matt's posts, it's always informative. The average weight of a regular American's gone up like 100 pounds in the last 20 years. So now every firefighter has mm-hmm. to be able to lift an extra 100 pounds per person, right? So I think that's really important. And I'd love to get the stuff over here. But unfortunately, the barriers here financially, in that essence, is rubbish. But it's never going to happen in a way, I guess, in the UK. But I love the aspect of, you know, keeping people in the fit, and not just, I guess, the firefighters. I guess you'd have the police in there as well, or the emergency services, to keep them fit and active. And particularly, I guess, you know, if they're injured on duty, which is one thing I really sort of really like in that sense. So general populations. I've trained a lot of general populations, Ted. So. I have people with false knees, false hips, you know, aged people. I think the oldest person I ever trained was 83. And then I've got a lady currently now, one-on-one at least, who does, you know, just being active. She's got two false knees, so keep her going. Keep her hips and her glutes and her legs and her kicking in, and she wants to lose a bit of weight here and there. But so we both obviously follow a conjugate protocol or system, whatever you people want to call it, really. And obviously, to some people, they don't understand the system and how it works. So for those people out there who don't really understand it or know what it is, really, explain it in your words and how you kind of have that principles. Because for me, the conjugate system is all about principles. And obviously what Louis did at Westside was make it a formality in terms of athletes and things, but you use the conjugate system for your general populations. Yes.
Yes. So yeah. I guess a lot of people like to call it the conjugate system, but in reality, in my opinion, all training is a equation. Okay. So in order to get someone better, you got to balance out the equation with what they're doing in their daily living with the training. It should always supplement what they're doing in their real life or whatever their job is, whether they're an athlete or a general population person. So take most general population. Do you work with mostly office workers or people that are stationary?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've got a gentleman, and it depends off. You see them one-on-one and how serious they are. Some people you get, I just kind of just want to tick the box, go in the gym, have a workout. You have in your back of your mind trying to train them as best you can with the time you have, time frame you have with them. And I guess the more consistency they have, the more they'll stick with things and pack things out. I've got a new gentleman who we're going to focus through that a lot with him. But yeah, for me, probably I've got one, the lady who's obviously 73, she's retired. A lot of my guys, I've got a couple of people in the forces, so police, trying to keep himself from being injured. But a lot of people, general populations in that essence, I've got a few office workers, and obviously traditional, you know, round a back over position, that kyphotic position, pain in the hips, potentially hamstrings are short, or at least tight, shall we say, not so shorter, but hip typically obviously weaker. And those sort of people, I find not easy necessarily to train, but quite simple to train because what they need is the basics. So continue what you're saying.
People take out of context with conjugate, they try to make it some elaborate system where it's like, okay, I need all the equipment in the world and I need this time to prepare. It's like, no, all you're simply doing is trying to find a way to progress them. So a great way of explaining that, one of my coaches said, running is running is running.
Yeah.
In my opinion, squat is a squat is a squat. You're doing a goblet squat, you're doing a safety bar squat. It's a squat at the end of the day.
Yeah,
but what you're doing with those different variables is just loading it slightly differently to address the weaknesses of that individual.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I think, so some of the people I know are fresh out of, I'll say fresh out of grad school, it's the master's degrees or undergrads or whatever. They're very, I say the word very textbooky because they have never really trained anybody in person and dealt with barriers in that sense, right? So for some people, block work works awesome, right? I've done that and it worked, and you know, you get strong. And actually, yeah. I don't want you to listen to Table Talk, because recently Dave's had on Hoff and Oliveira, really interesting one, to be fair. And what Dave was saying towards the end of the first episode, and it's something I always talk about, and I, when people ask my powerlifters particularly, is you get strong, but then you have to transfer it over to your sport. So for powerlifting, I only compete in bench press nowadays, but I max out every week to some capacity, particularly as a drug-free lifter. One of the things I took from when you guys were working with you guys was actually, it's not always about the single. It's not, it's the effort. It's not the heaviest single you can possibly do. And I guess that particularly obviously the conjugate system is working. All the strength speed force velocity curve in one kind of aspect here congruently. That's the point. But I think people get lost in the fact there has to be an absolute single. If you're fucked, you can just train like two singles. It's 90% plus is typically, but one of the things that Matt talked about in one of his seminars or one of his videos, I can't remember which it is, he's got a lot of information out there, which is right. Super important for me is, and I do this in my squat. I don't compete in squat, but I still love maxing out a squat because it's really fun. And I lift in briefs sometimes, not so much now, but back in 6 months ago. Morning. Oh, briefs, love it. I love briefs. Everyone talks about gear all the time, like powerlifting gear, and they badmouth it. And I'm on part of these like Facebook groups and things with about, and a bench press, for example, and they go, oh, I don't understand gears. Well, don't do it then, man. I don't care. It's fun. But the reason I lift single plies, right. It's fun. And single plies is more available to more federations, particularly drug-free ones, that kind of stuff. But it's really fun. You get to meet people as well, you know. But so I've got a meet coming out. So I just been in my shirt last week, hitting three boards, getting used to that, getting it broken down. And it's a bit of a skill in aspects. But like I said, so getting as strong as a whole. So if we go back to Dave and Anthony, Oliveira, is if you're a football guy, a soccer guy, or American football guy, or whatever your sport is, you can get strong in the off season, preseason. And the beautiful thing for me about the conjugate system is because it takes in account you and, like you said, your actual life, not just you playing sport. Then you can adapt it for that, but you can continue doing it throughout the whole season. Yes, you might not gain the strength that you might do in the off season or in the preseason because you're not.
Or you don't lose it.
Exactly that. So that's for me, as from a sporting perspective, is really, really important. If you're playing football to you, football to you guys, American football to people over in England and other parts of the world, which I'm a big fan of. Then you'll get strong in the off season, but then you practice how to tackle or throw a ball or run or whatever it's going to be, or the SAQ stuff in your practices. So you got to get strong and fit and preventing injury at least the best you can by getting strong. Then everything else will fall into place after time. And I think that's really important for me. And I think if you, on the base level with general population, you take into account the basic stuff and you can kind of work around with that. But when you're working with an athlete, which you'll probably have more experience with than I will, because over here it's a bit, people don't like spending the money sometimes unless they are already within that range. And you know, if you're, again, the collegiate program you have over there in the US is 100% better than ever is over here, because I even the college football's on telly, so whenever I can I watch that on the ESPN, and I just it's way more attacking. The yards they run is awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You what you're talking about is the top 1% of the sports here in the country. When I was in college, we technically had a strength coach, but it was one of our position coaches that just loved the lift. So it wasn't even a real strength coach. Like, looking back, like, I still talk to him because he's a really good dude, and I'm grateful for what he did, because he did it for essentially little to no pay when he was first starting off as a coach. But I was like, you know, some of the things we did were really stupid and probably got a lot of guys hurt.
Oh yeah, that's the learning curve though. I mean, if you take Westside, go back to that kind of idea I'll use the word perfected, although I don't think you can really perfect the conjugate system because it's always changing. And again, which is my favorite thing about the system, you're always learning, getting more data and work through there. But I had like 40 years of Louis playing with people, and he got the ideas we did eventually. And even like the Book of Methods 2005 when that was written, you know, changing that compared to what it is now, and some of the information in there is unusually so outdated because the percentages are different. And one of the biggest things that, when you were training, coaching me guys, when you were coaching me, I was raw. That's what I was doing. I only really benched, but I did everything you guys fucking told me to, because that was the point. But one of the things, again, you're learning is that the percentages was way lower. Massive advocate of low percentages. And now I'm 8 weeks away from my European. I'm still squatting. I'm still deadlifting. I've just bought some new bar. I've got a little gym down the bottom of the garden. So I've just bought, I've got a cambered bar in there now, save the shoulders. I've got a bow bar in there, save the shoulders. I don't
that's
really
use that.
Yeah, I don't really use I've got an SSB. I get a yoke bar, but it's too long for what I've got. It's too wide. So I have to get a different variation of an SSB type of thing. But it's all about those thought processes, I think, that when you not necessarily go into a meet, but taking in the idea of the athlete, the individual, where you will, I guess, take away the things that might that don't necessarily have to have. You don't have to bench press with a straight bar. I do because it's my sport, but I don't always train with a straight bar. You know, I use a Swiss bar. They've got the cambered Swiss bar type thing. I think Kabuki's got a really nice one. The Cadillac bar, that's the one. Wicked. What one way along? Because it make me crap. And I get better at that. And then I have to rule, practice the movement. And then, so getting the shirt now every other week, I work a food board, put my weight down, get the load right, get my feeding right. And then it's practicing it now. That's the process now. I won't necessarily get enough strength coming through between now and the meet time, particularly because I circumax my bench press. Not everyone does, but I circumax my bench press. I think it works really well for me, and it did last time out. So why the hell not? So giving up to that, I'm not getting much stronger, but I can get better in my shirt and learn that groove and that line, practice my sport. And I think that's where people really lose track of not just the cardio system itself, but strength training. So with general population people, you conjugate. So I used to cook wide conjugate, and everyone always thinks about Westside, but use the conjugate system, like we said. So how would you incorporate, for you, how would you incorporate the max effort method in that with a general population person as a typical?
Yep. So I'll give you a perfect example. And so one of my clients, she's in her mid late 50s, came to me with shoulder issues and has been addressing that with a doctor, and has one hip replaced. So one thing I noticed is she could not pick anything up from the floor without feeling pain. Okay. Yeah. So it makes it really hard to do certain movements, especially when you're trying to do a hip hinge movement, where I think as a functional human being, you should be able to safely squat down to the floor without a heeled shoe and pick something off the ground and be able to go about your day. So
we'll cover the heeled shoes in a bit, because we have the same opinion on this, but carry on.
Oh yeah. But essentially for her, I had to go from the top to the bottom with the deadlift. So we started with barbell RDLs. So in my mind, okay, the RDL is a good movement, but you're going, one, get bored of that, and two, what are some ways we can change that movement so it's not exactly the same and elicit even more growth faster? So the first one, we're just doing your typical barbell RDL that you see most people do. Next week, we switched to a landmine where I had a Viking press attachment, and she's doing the RDL with that. So you just changed the physics of that lift because the load is being supported by a hinge rather than in her hands. And then the third week, we did it on a belt squat, a cable belt squat. So now you're further changing the physics of that again by using the belt, even though it's a little bit more stable, but it's on a cable. So the resistance of it is a little bit different and the movement's a little bit faster, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the rep range, that sort of stuff, because again, just to clarify things for you, for people, whereas max effort, In traditional sense, obviously most of it's paid for powerlifting. At least that's what it's meters per safe.
Right.
Rep ranges for her max effort work.
I typically stay within the five and sixes. Mm-hmm. I don't go above that because again, I feel like the 3 to 6 rep range is kind of a sweet spot, especially when you go to the five and sixes. So it's a sweet spot because one, you get to lift heavier weights that you normally wouldn't do in really high rep ranges. Mm-hmm. And those higher weights, because realistically, in that short a period of time, you're not doing enough mechanical damage enough to the muscles to elicit muscular growth. You're doing two things. You're eliciting neurological responses to be ready for to handle that type of stress later on, because that's the thing people don't realize or don't think about when they're training, is that every time we pick up a weight, that's your body responding to stress. So for a general population person, I'm purposely trying to put them in a high stress environment so they can handle stress within their daily life in a better manner. It's not necessarily to pick up more weight, it's to be able to handle stress better.
Yeah, I think some of those things, again, changing enough, it's the effort, isn't it? Rather than necessarily the load you're lifting.
Absolutely.
It's the effort rather than the weight itself. And that becomes, again, absolutely, changing from a landmine attachment or belts, whatever. Like you said, that changes that physical point where it's a pendulum or whatever it's going to be, a straight way up and down, mm-hmm, where gravity takes it. But continue.
Absolutely. And then the second thing it does is it elicits a hormonal response to where your body's like, oh crap, if we deal with this heavy load again, we may not be able to do that. So we got to send hormones out in the body to be able to change our body to handle that stress better, such as growth hormone, testosterone, that type of stuff that the body does naturally. So, yeah. And again, a 5 rep max is going to be different for you, or it's going to be different for our clients, because we have a better understanding or able to push harder in that rep range to listen to a different response. General pop, usually not so much depending on the individual, but I also know that rep range is going to be a lot safer because they're not going to be going so heavy that one technical flaw is going to ruin everything and injure them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Obviously, the heavier the load becomes, the more, I'm going to say those are perfect, or at least better your form needs to be. I think that comes to the conditioning thing, right? So do you still do wedding warm-ups for your clients?
Yes, and I still do them myself to an extent. I changed the movements up a bit, but yeah. I still do the
which is obviously thing. So the wedding warm was something that I put in place. It's for other people, not just me. That kind of prepare the body. It's warming up, but it's more specific. So always be fair exercises. I always hated doing it because it sucks so much. It really helps you out, you know, and it's just like other versions. So of doing higher rep bodyweight squats even, or split squats or whatever it's going to be if you're doing lower body, because that's prepping for the movement, and then a couple of exercises that you suck at. So for me, when I do them, which isn't as much as I should, mainly lower body work, to be fair, but because it takes a long time to train, it becomes a work, but it was always lateral glutes and my hamstrings. They're the things that suck, and which is probably the same. You find that on most people, and particularly desk workers, office people. So at this point is where we had a bit of a technical difficulty on my part, because I'm not very technical, and I thought we'd lost all of the first episode, or the first part of this podcast. So we kind of did a really, 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 really brief catch up before we carried on and finished off the talk and the episode for you guys. So apologies for the abruptness, but we're back in. So recording now. Okay, so the kind of second part of this podcast with Teddy. Unfortunately, Teddy, I haven't told you this yet, but I don't think anything we were just done recorded. I don't think anything's recorded. I'm not very good at tech, and I might have fucked it up. But we'll do a ever so slight recap on some of the stuff, because what we spoke about on jumping populations and stuff is really important now. I think it's just me being useless, to be honest, mate. So we'll do a quick recap. I want to hopefully try and blend these together, but I just kind of 2 second pass is quite fun as well, isn't it? So so we're talking ever so briefly about obviously Teddy meeting Matt at an NSCA CSCS kind of exam prep thing. And then worked with Matt for a decade, right? Decade?
Yep.
Yeah. And now you're doing Ogoji performance and stuff. We're just briefly talking about, and we'll do a quick recap on utilizing the conjugate system for general population. You talk about a lady you had who you do max effort work with, and organizing that. Mm-hmm. So we're hitting different exercise each time to making sure different stresses through the body, so they're not getting accustomed to the exercise. And obviously, anywhere between, you said the sweet spot you found for that kind of client was 3 to 6 reps. So yeah. Nothing's going to get shot. Not going to blow the knees off, that kind of thing. Because we're not hitting singles all the time, right? Okay, so. Yeah. So we also had a, while this other video is going through, we also said Teddy told me something when we were organizing this, and it's quite funny. Now, we spoke about West Side versus the World a little bit in the podcast. Hopefully I can salvage that. I should be able to, but I just have to call my tech mate who'll just tell me what to do if I can. But so West Side versus the World, we're talking about Matt Welling being in there and how Matt departed that. No way of his own, but he came back. So the reason I said this to Matt is because that I realized Louis kicked him out, but he came back after, you know, being with Chuck and just fucking smashed everything. It was awesome. With his squats and everything else. So you live in Louis's old house.
Yes. So Matt bought it off of Louis, and then I bought it off Matt.
So did Matt buy the house when he was training with Westside?
I'm going to assume yes. I never asked them.
Yeah, I don't think they got on afterwards. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah. Because Matt was at Westside, what, 2000s, just post Dave's era. It wasn't Dave Tate's era, really. Mm-hmm. Kind of crossover a little bit down there. But I forgot we were on track with it before. Okay, yeah, so let's go back to programming again a bit more, because that's really important. That's mm-hmm. what people really want to gel with, right? Hopefully.
Right.
So the older, so we're going to recap a little bit. So we spoke about the utilizing the conjugate system, and the best thing that I enjoy about the conjugate system is that's adaptable. So it's not just max effort. Well, it is max effort and speed work and special exercise, that kind of thing. But how you use that to capacity to get someone stronger, and obviously in your case, injury prevention, and going back to hopefully we can salvage this, but utilizing with the athletes you have coming out from kind of post-surgery, post-physical therapist mm-hmm. thing. So in that instance, what are you doing with those guys? Conjugating systems, or are you just, is it still pure rehab?
A little bit of both. So the difference with the population I was dealing with, especially part of that ACL program, was so when I was training them, it wasn't mostly resistance training, which was frustrating. It was mostly just improving landing mechanics through plyometrics,
yeah, okay,
and then small level running. Now, what I found, especially given my background and then the people that developed the program, were physical therapists. And that's why it's so frustrating. And that's, I believe it's gotten better over the years, especially recently with more physical therapists practicing what they're preaching and actually getting in the weight room to kind of see the full spectrum of things. But there's still a lot of disconnect from, okay, this is what you're able to do rehab, and this is what you should be doing to get better, versus what you need to do to get better, if that makes sense. So that's why I'm a big fan of Russin and his Dr. John Russin and his team, because they actually have a really good fill on that. But in physical therapy, some of the exercises are either too they're not enough to elicit a response.
Yeah.
Or they get to a point where it's like, okay, we're going to change the biomechanics of that. Okay, well, I have someone that's trying to learn how to land properly, but their glutes and hamstrings don't fire worth a crap. Yeah. So I don't care how many times you practice landing that jump, if you don't have the basic hardware. So I'm kind of a computer guy. If you don't have the hardware to support the software you're trying to upload,
yep,
the computer's going to crash every time.
Yeah. And that's the important thing, isn't it? Like I said, adaptability. And I always say, over here, it's the same thing with therapists, physio. So people kind of get physical therapists, or in our case, physios and that sort of thing, kind of muddled up, because it's essentially the same stuff that we do. So it's just on a lower level. So it's still strength training. So how many times have people gone, oh, my shoulder's feeling dodgy. Oh, okay, well, just do these external rotations or whatever the exercise is going to be to get them stronger. Strength training, right? It's just filling those gaps, making those gaps smaller and smaller and smaller to make sure the bigger picture's kind of what you want. So I think that's a really, really important kind of factor that people, again, get mixed up on this with the conjugate system compared to like a block periodization. And particularly when you're working with an array of individuals, not just athletes. I think when people, I don't know about yourself and obviously in the States and stuff, but over here when people become a personal trainer, which can be done at a cereal box nowadays, or just changing the bio, really. Yeah. Just go on Instagram and just check your bio. Personal trainer. Everyone's a fucking personal trainer. And it irritates me, because you get some really good ones. And some of the really good ones have no formal education. So Dave Tate, it's got this rate your coach thing. One of the things on there is formal education, but I know people have no formal education, no national degree or a CSES or anything like that, or absolutely smart, like insanely smart. But I know people who have those things. I know people who've got master's degrees in sports conditioning and whatever it's going to be, who are fucking dumb. And they might have some book smart. So it's all book smart. So they don't have to apply it to people. And that's for me the big, big part of it. So you can learn all the information you want, but they don't teach you necessarily how to apply it to people. And they might apply it to, you know, a D1 level quarterback who's got two good knees and his donor arm is perfectly fine. There's no issues in his rotators or his neck or anything like that because it hasn't been smashed about enough. But when you come to, you know, Sally, who's just wants to pick up her kids up, you know, grandchildren, and she's 65 years old, she's got a dodgy hip, you know, she had a heart attack, all those things, you know. I think that's the big thing, because chronic conditions are so, it's such an adaptable a mechanism or system. And that's really good. Now, again, before we got cut off from this, we were going to talk really briefly, because it's really funny, and we agreed both on this, about fucking heel raised shoes, right? Now, they have a place, right? So if you're going to do ollie lifting, you're going to try and compete in Olympics, or even just do it for fun, I think they're really important. Because I mean, I've got some. I bench in mine. I have to have flat foot when I bench, and it's a performance-based thing, so what the fuck not? I don't squat in them typically. I do occasionally for close stance. Well, I hit my quads a lot. But in your opinion then, obviously, I'm working with Matt, and Matt's a massive advocate for this. And actually, I think I was listening to a podcast. I think he was with Mark Bell. I can't remember who he was talking to. And he said about Poliquin, right? It was him and Poliquin were, and him and Charles were good friends. And obviously, when Charles died, it affected him quite a bit. But kind of how when Charles was later on in life, when Matt was doing really well, how he spoke about vertical shins, and I was like, oh shit, this thing's for real, right? So for you, I spoke with Matt, working with athletes, we have the same opinion on this, really. Heel shoes or flat shoes? What's your take on why?
Okay, so there is my mindset when I was with Matt, and then now that I'm off on my own a bit, I've kind of formed some different opinions.
Yeah.
But if I have to go one way or the other, I'm going to say all day long, the human body was built to be able to squat down to the ground without a heeled shoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was designed to do so, it would have one. Now, with that in mind, now you're kind of going to the vertical shank versus incline shank, which to me, like, I think everybody, in my personal opinion, should be able to do both.
Yes.
And this is where my philosophy gets very different and gets a little, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but, and that's where you got to take the coach and the individual as differences. So my opinion, I am a strength coach, and the way I prevent injury is to get everybody used to any position they need to be in. So if you're a power lifter, a vertical shank is going to be perfect, and it's going to allow you to squat the maximal amount of weight. That makes sense. If you're an Olympic lifter, well, you got to learn how to squat with your knees going forward. But my idea is that everybody should be able to do don't make any movement a limiting factor, because there's always going to be a benefit. So we talked about, and when I say we, like Matt in the past, like, sumo versus conventional deadlift. Both lifters, in my opinion, can benefit from both, because I noticed my sumo deadlift started going better or getting better when I started conventional deadlifting, because I never challenged the low back muscles in that position like conventional deadlifting does. Now, conventional deadlifters benefited from sumo deadlifting because they never worked the hips and the glutes from that bottom position on the deadlift like they do in the sumo deadlift. So in my opinion, every movement, a squat is a squat is a squat. Every movement has its benefits and downsides. The real challenge of being a coach and really programming this for people is, okay, that's where the law of specificity comes in.
Yep.
You go like, well, what does my client or athlete need to do. So that way I know, okay, we will play around with this modality, but we're not going to spend all day on it because we need to be good at this one.
Yeah, perfect. I think that's the thing. You know, it's the same argument, I guess, sumo versus conventional, as you kind of covered briefly, is I always perpetuate the side of sumo cheating, but I train sumo because it's good for my hips. I think the idea of saying one's better than the other one, I mean, I do believe that in the powerlifting world, light lifters benefit typically more from a sumo because it's leverage-based, particularly if you're kind of short, but that's all down to the pomatry, right? That's down to your limbs and stuff. And, you know, as a super heavyweight myself and Matt and obviously Donnie Thompson, but not Hoff, actually, interesting, all do conventional. But Hoff does sumo, but I think that's his gut, right? That's getting the way, it must do. But I think I find better when I sumo in gear. If I'm competing in kit, I'll always sumo because it's A, you get leverage, you get more out of the suit. It's easy to get down to the bar as well, man. That's for me, that's one of the best, the easiest thing. You get more out of the suit and it's just getting to the bar is the worst part. Squat, start, top down, bench the same, but deadlift, get to the bar. If you get to the bar and get it tight, you lift it typically, but it doesn't really help me out because I'm going off the floor and I'm crap at the top. So my hips need work. So for me, I always perhaps favor conventional more just because it gets my glutes working a little bit harder in that top range, obviously down to my leverages, short arms, bench presser dude. But I think one of the biggest things is people say, oh, I'm good at this exercise, keep doing a lot. Well, no, do the stuff you shit at because that's going to get you better. You know,
exactly.
I know those, you know, I guess our philosophy is the same in that sense of if you get better at everything, then the stuff you want to, your sport is such powerlifting is the squat itself will be better. So I actually okay with sumo deadlifting because my squat stance is wide, particularly again when I'm lifting equipped because I'm a wide stance squatter, good for the hips, get the most out of the suit, you know, at least for me. So if you get good at everything, you're never going to crap at anything. You might, you know, you might not excel directly at anything initially, but then that's when if you're going, okay, now it's time to, I'm 8 weeks out from a meet, 12 weeks out, whatever your program is going to sort of be, that's when you'll convert yourself into a powerlifting mode as such. Like I said earlier, that's hopefully not lost. So I'm 8 weeks away from a meet. So getting my shirt on, get my boards going, get that line going, get used to that. Just so that I'm not limited just because my skill in that thing is rubbish. And the same thing with anything else. So if you're good at everything, it's fine. But not with the heel stuff, right? So again, back into the squat stuff. Like I said, the squat. So I go with the bodybuilder guy. He's a low bar squatter. His knees go over his toes, but he squats flat. He can squat that way. I can't, but I do my best to get down to there. I have bigger hips than he does. I have different leg positions. I got bigger legs to a point, but my hips are much larger. And you know, I'm thicker. That's, you know, that's how things are. So I think the biggest lesson people can take from our discussion or any discussion around any sort of systems, whether it's conjugate or not, is more about utilizing the tools rather than as a way to build your house. Like you said about the hardware software thing, it's very analogy, the same idea, right? So you gotta have the right mouse. You have to have the same mouse, a good mouse, and you can find the perfect one over time. If you know, I'm not good at technologies for technologies. Yeah, there you go. You know, I know powerlifters that, you know, and again, for me, the longevity aspect of that, we covered this earlier in the podcast thing, like I said, it might be lost, but longevity aspect of it is what I think is more important, because if you're only training, so typical block periodization, right? Most people do work in blocks. So we'll talk about that real briefly. Sorry, the bird outside my house. Real briefly, you break up your macro cycle, say a year's worth of competition, typically 4 blocks, you know, 3 months each set. You can have a GPP phase almost, and you can have a hypertrophy phase if that's what the person wants, then the strength phase and the conversion or whatever it's going to be in towards whatever. With a cardiac system, you're always going to be thereabouts. And then for me, it's not necessarily is you're ramping up obviously the load you're lifting, because it's got to be your senescence has got to kick in. So your motor units have to be adequate and efficient to get to where you want to be. But you're never really that far away It might, for me, I cycle max 6 weeks maybe, and then at week three, potentially, depends what I'm doing, typically week three, and then I'm ramping down. And that works great for me. But at that point, everything's honed in. I'm not getting any stronger. I've just got to make sure I'm recovered and gone through there. And with the block polarization stuff, you're working in blocks, so things are getting detrained, but you're also going to be working typically the same thing for at least a three-month period, depending on the coach and the athlete. But most people I know have got good at the deadlift, for example. There's a lad who I used to coach a little bit when he was an undergrad. Conjugate, same as I coached the one else. He pulled 300, pulled 660. Hook grip on a thing. I think he pulled 305 maybe, so about 670, whatever it is. It's like 100 kilos. So, yeah, that's his weight. Sorry, he weighs 100 kilos. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, not pounds. 300 pounds isn't the best for him, but managed to get at that point. But what happened with him is he's just specific. So you could change his exercise to be shit. Same thing with his squat. It's never got better. And I kept telling him about his squat pattern. He didn't listen. 2 kilos on his squat in the same period of time, went from lifting like 220, 230 to lifting 300 on the deadlift. You're always going to have something that's obviously going to take almost priority, because that's just how the body adapts. But always work on this more. His bench press the same, because he did his knee squatting. And his bench press went up, but he's starting to get niggles again. And these little injuries, they last. If you don't train thing, he does chuck in Swiss barbs so often, but he doesn't do all the special exercises that he should do necessarily for him. When he was really nailing those things in, his deadlift went up. But when he's neglected those things, his deadlift kind of stagnated. He's fucked now. But his bench, whatever else, but he might bench 4 times a week. It's a frequency-based program, right? You just get good at that shit. You're not saying stronger. As a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whenever I do, you know, train this system, I've always felt stronger. Nothing hurts. At least normally you get issues, right? Yeah. But nothing hurts. I don't have issues with anything else. And I think that's for me the biggest part, because it isn't necessarily a block. I mean, you ramp up. So how I'd organize a squat, at least for me. So we talked about squatting Bruce earlier. So one thing I did, and again, Dave Hoff spoke about this briefly and worked really well, works really well for me on particularly a squat. So I hit a 5 rep max raw squat to some degree, whether it's SSB or it's going to be typically. And then I hit a 3 rep max squat, either to a box. I like a box squat myself, but obviously the loads are going to be heavier, clip it in the box. And then I'll patch up briefs on week three, hit a big single, loads of band tension, because that's, I like about that band tension. And then week four, again, this is a thing from Matt, organizing ourselves in. So rather than going on to deload because I feel like I should, is making a deload or a back off as such when you're on week four, so it's deliberate. And then when you're back on to week one again, you're stronger because you're not, and your CNS isn't fucked because you're just a big weight, taking a step off, and then you're back in. You know, for me, that's really important to understand, and it is structured. I think one of the things about the conjugate system, again, people start structured, it is structured, providing you structure it, you know,
right?
And I think that it has phases. So I just spoke really briefly about a four-week phase. That's one phase, and then we can take the same idea again, but maybe I'm gonna hit a 3 rep max raw squat or 5 rep max to a box or bands or chains, or change the bar. So like I said, I have a bow bar now, and I come up, but I change one of those. It's changing enough that it's a different squat. The load might be different, but they should be all similar.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the changes. And it's getting good at everything. It's the jack of all trades thing. If you're good at a deadlift, I've beat people in competitions before because they're good at one thing. And they go, oh, I'm going to deadlift this much weight, 600 pounds, 700 pounds. Like, well, yeah, but your squat sucks. Mm-hmm. But your bench is terrible. Which is typically the way everyone nowadays, back in my day, Teddy, and probably when you, everyone's asked, well, how much you bench? Nowadays, it's what's your deadlift?
Yeah.
There's all these young guys coming through. I think it's great, you know, everyone's taking into consideration this stuff, but everyone's an expert now. Like I said, just change your Instagram profile, mate, and off you're away.
But kind of like what we talked about, we value being all around strong and maneuverable in everything we do.
Well,
like you don't hear people go like, hey, what's your total?
Yeah. Well, my shit. So don't ask me that. I'm a bencher nowadays, Teddy. I squat for fun.
You're part of the problem now.
I deadlifted today. I deadlift. I'm sorting back at death. My mask getting stronger. But one of the blokes who really on Instagram and stuff. I think it's just his name, who you've probably seen, but it's not really. It's not competing or anything like that. It's just it's Tom Haviland.
Okay.
I've sent you on here. He doesn't show his face very rarely. He's coached by Australian strength coach. I can't remember his name now. I should know his name because he was Thor's coach for a while. But he's just monstrously strong at everything. I mean, he's 6'4" and weighs like 400 pounds, and he's lean. He's just a monster. But everything. Searches squats. Sorry.
Is he not a strong man?
No. Didn't compete. It's just like a southern dude. I'm sure he's in the States. Southern dude. Just wears all the stuff you'd get like down south Texas, I guess. I don't know where he is.
You're not talking about Darren Bell, are you?
No, his name's Tom Haviland. I'll send you his profile on Instagram. Is like some of the stuff he does. It's like it's just how you teach like a deadlift, for example, keeping your, at least we talk about lumbar tension and strength, right? Because it's always a range, but it's just a person you just admire. Like he could just search a squat 700 pounds like nothing, but that's max effort work.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's just such a bizarre. I send you. It's really interesting to watch. If anyone's out there watching it, it's Tom Haviland. Haviland. It's just just a bloke to watch. You know how people look at Michael Hearn and go, wow, that's a beautiful human being. But in general,
did he just squat at Elite the other day?
Who's that? Tom?
Yeah.
I don't think he did. I'll send it to you now if I find it up. Just because it's really I follow him on Instagram. And he's just, I don't think he did. I mean, there's a video of him here. 7:49 Zercher PR. It's just, yeah, I sent you in a minute, but that's just the bloke, just nothing. I sent you to now, Teddy.
Oh, no, I did see that, yeah.
He's just all round strong. He's nothing conventional. Like, he's just a bloke, just lift weights. And yeah, it's a phenomenal bloke. But that's kind of the strength we're talking about, because you could put him in, you could take a bloke like that who's not necessarily athletic in how people would say athletic, bounding, jump, ply, that sort of stuff, but you could chuck him in almost any sport and it just physically dominate. You could teach him to be fast. Right. And that's, I think, you know, there's that story about William Perry, the fridge back in the 80s before the Bears. And I was just walking on the street and sort of like, you're playing football because he's enormous. And he learned to play football. You can do those things. Over here in rugby, you know, some of the professional teams just take big, strong people and teach them to play rugby or teach them to play a sport because they've got that base that takes years. So I think, because we'll have to end this soon because you got your day to get on. We'll go through your stuff in a minute. But I think what's really important is that is to get the base round. I think the base strength is the important part for me. No matter who you are and where you're coming from, it's just making sure that base is there. And whether you're obviously your lady who's like mid-50s with Roger hip, where it's going to be, or whether you're, you know, a 22-year-old lad, but all the youngsters, they're trying to pull these big deadlifts. That's the most impressive thing. And all these bars are changing, right? It's like any sport, you change a bar that flexes off the floor. I went to my first national meet here, and in my federation, they don't have a lift bar like the IPF. So you have one bar for everything. And then people were going, oh, they're not
changing. That's that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The weights, I mean, when you have like, bless them though, all these really big super heavyweights squatting like 1,000 pounds or 900 pounds for all, obviously Blaine's obviously single ply, but that bar wobbles. I mean, it flexes. I mean, it's bad enough. And I mean, my biggest squat's like 690, whatever it is. So bad enough with just that on it. And that's flex.
That's gear, right?
Yeah, that's gear. That's some gear, yeah.
Yeah.
But then that's years ago, right? We do it nowadays. So it's more fun to bench and things. But it's just, for me, actually, the reason I don't really compete in full power for less and stuff is just because it's my recovery. With work, anything else, trying to build what I have here and go through the systems, and you'll know this obviously because when you've competed and things, that's, you said to me before actually that when you're trying to compete and you have lifters at the same meet, how hard that is. It's just can't, it's really struggle. And for me, taking a step back from doing competing, at least squatting, deadlifting, and just doing bench only, I can feel so much better from there. And like I said, changing the bars and things for me, so particularly this close to meet time, just so my shoulders don't get jammed up, you know, because my best bench, well, bench, one bench now is more than what I've squatted in comp. So, that's just me with short arms. But I think that, you know, going back to what I said, having the same bar, is everyone's complaining about, oh, these bars, this isn't a deadlift bar. Like, yeah, but just that's because you're shit. Well, just don't train with a bar that's advantage for you. Train with a bar that makes you crap.
Well, I actually have been trying to get my deadlift back up because I haven't competed in some time, but I'm really still trying to be as strong as I possibly can. Yeah. And I was very happy the other day in my training because I actually pulled 500 for a single, but I used a power bar instead of a deadlift bar, which for anybody that knows the difference, like that's significantly harder. Not only is the bar about 2 millimeters thicker, so it's more taxing on your grip, but it doesn't flex nearly as much. So that way, when you're trying to have that initial pull, all that weight comes up at the same time, rather being able to flex the bar about an inch or two, which puts your body in a better optimal position.
Well, for this, there's quite a few people. There's Jamal Browning. He's a 5 kilo sumo strapped up thing. He's vertical, basically, because that bar flexes so much.
Yeah.
Dan Griggs the same. And actually, if you watch Chris Duffin, I love Chris. I love Kabuki and stuff. They're really smart guys. He did a 1,003 for a triple. But, I mean, the first one was what it was. But the second two were almost like half pulled. Because that bar's flexed. Don't get me wrong. The amount of weight you got on that bar is insane.
Well, wait, it goes anyway. From almost by your ankles to mid-shin. Like,
yeah. And I think what's hard for me, I have a guy who's who first lifting sumo. He has a few issues. We mostly have him lift sumo, and we hinge him more like a Dimmel style deadlift sometimes, or rack pull. That's his conventional stance when we do that, because he can't get to the bar because of pain and that sort of stuff. It's just got some issues from accidents from when he was younger, proper like scar tissue everywhere. But for him, well, like 10 minutes left for this, we'll come up in a minute, but for him, trying to show him and videos of really good people deadlifting that haven't got a flexi bar is really hard, because I'm not, you know, for super wide grip, what it's going to be, because everyone has these positions. Like that's the Dan Griggs is an awesome fast deadlift, but it's the weight's off the floor at the end of like 3 inches, man. And it's strong, don't be wrong, it's strong, it's strong as crap. And I like to see those people then kind of reenact those things best they can with a stiff bar, and that shows me true strength. Really. So so Teddy, we've got this up now because it's the second thing we're going to go through, and I really appreciate your time. You've done this for me. And hopefully I can grab the first half of this, because there was some gold on that. Really interesting things.
I was wanting to hope to talk to you about maybe we could do more of these in the future, like every 2 months or something, and absolutely. Then actually like have a thing we're talking about, so that way it's a little more organized and people can kind of draw more from
this. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. You know, one of the big things happening to you, obviously meeting you through the internet, that sounds weird to say, but whatever, we're both married, that's grand. that you know, it's not just it's linking in with people who you kind of admire or respect that are in the same fields. It's normal, almost like a networking thing, because I talked to Joe Lasco from Westside. He left Westside a while ago. I talked to Joe, and my intention is, and I told you this, to be fair, is what's going to be this year, but a lot of work at the house, hence the shit behind me. But we're going to fly over to Columbus for about a week, 5 days to a week, and I've got to organize it next year, probably early next year. Pop in and come see you down at and we'll, you know, we'll train whatever. I'm gonna go see Joe down at the industry gym. The chances are, well, I'm going to try and meet up with or at least meet Dave down at the compound and if Matt's going to be around, have a crank up him for 10, 20 minutes or even half an hour, maybe jump a podcast with people here or there, or just chat to them and just go there. Because Matt's got his book coming out, which I'm excited to read about, because what he was talking to Dave about it, I don't not finished the podcast on it yet, but what I like about what Matt does is he takes all that really good information from science and practice, from essential strength conditioning, from super training, all this stuff, which is awesome. But they don't really tell you how to apply it. And what Matt's, and my understandings at least, you'll probably know this from Matt, is getting that book and then all this information that's gold, and then teach people how to use it. And I think that's really interesting, because again, it's all, like I said, book smarts, knowing stuff, but then how do I use it for this dude? You know, I might know about the stretch, you know, the stretch shortened cycle being kind of gnawed by 0.2 seconds, but how do I, you know, what's the point in that for this? And I think that's a big part. So hopefully that's the plan for next year for me. And I definitely come out and we can chat and we can do this more often. I'm excited to do that, you know, but we'll chat more and more about your thing. For so, sure. So you'd obviously you're training people online as well as in person. I'll get you to send me all your details for that. Obviously your Instagram post, anything else you want. And I'll hang that in the show notes for this. But so you're taking on one-on-ones now currently?
Yes. I'm open for online clients right now. Yep.
Yeah, cool. You should build that side of thing. I think for what we do is you got to train heroic as well, right? And I think that's a really good. It's an affordable way for people to learn and get strong, right? And I think that's for me the essence of things. And I want to give out things as much as you can for free, but we have to live. That's the reality. We help people to come out, and you know, so. How do people find you on Instagram?
At Agoge, AGOGE dot performance.
Where did the name come from, Ted? Where did it come from?
So I still intend on doing this, but it kind of started a little bit in my head when I was working for Matt, and was it like I wanted to make a athlete development or child development book, or manual. Especially with my experience, because I didn't get to really tap into this, but I have been in the high school, which is grades 9 through 12 in the U.S. So I worked with 10-year-olds all the way up through the collegiate ranks, up to 22 years old. So I've worked with a wide range of athletes there. And then I also work with that range of athletes from firefighters, which you'll have anywhere from an 18-year-old up to a 65-year-old. So with my experience doing that, I kind of wanted to look back. So Esteban Bali is a Canadian strength coach, where he has a great system, modern system for youth athletics growing up. But I wanted to dig deeper into it, and I looked at ancient cultures to see who had really good systems for upbringing youth, kind of youth development. And I came across the Spartans with their school called the Agoge. So they mentioned it on the movie 300 a little bit. But if you look deeper into some of the stuff they did a phenomenal job of creating an environment for people to learn and really to hone their skills growing up. So I wanted to base my training and philosophy on that. Like, yes, I'm going to teach you, I'm going to help you the best I can, but realistically, we got to create an environment that allows you to use everything I'm teaching you to be able to go to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So you know how a lot of people have been big about nose breathing and the mouth tape and stuff like that? So it's funny, because I was doing some reading on the Agoge. One of the things they did for the kids, this is thousands of years ago, thousands of years ago. One of the things they competed against each other was running like a mile to 3 miles with water in their mouth. And they had to spit it out at the end and fill a cup to a certain amount. So how are you going to breathe on that run?
Through
your nose.
Trainees never knew. It repeats itself.
Yeah. I mean, humans are, unless we grow a third leg or something, nothing's really going to change.
No, it's pretty good. So, okay, wicked. I mean, we'll get to, there's loads more we can cover on all this stuff, right? I mean, that nose breathing, mouth breathing thing is, I had one guy speak to me about stuff and said, "Oh, it's going to do it revolutionize." It's like, you can't even do the basics, man. So you stick with the basics, and then you can go through that. Don't worry about all that fancy shit. Do that later. Otherwise, if you've got nowhere to go. But again, we can go to this deep, and we've got 2 minutes left. So, go get your performance on Instagram. Uh-huh. Web page or anything? Any other details?
Not yet. Still trying to work on that, but eventually, I do want to get a web page where I do have a what I call a thorough Thursday. Okay, yes. So kind of quick story on that is, I started Technique Tuesdays at Winning Strength, and then I did that to grow the Instagram page over there for the gym. And then Matt wanted to keep it behind a paywall because he thought it was pretty valuable for people. So from my understanding, he still continues to do the Technique Tuesdays. Well, I didn't want to straight up steal that name, even though I tried to help create it. One of my former clients helped me come up with the name Thorough Thursday. Nice. So every Thursday I release a video on YouTube where I go over an exercise and talk and describe how to do the exercise.
That's nice. Good. I've seen some of those things, and obviously you follow up Fridays to pop around as well. It's like an informative thing for people to catch up with you. So Teddy, it's been a pleasure, man. Hopefully I can find out the first half of this fastest podcast, because I'm devastated that I lost that. That's just typical meme technology, to be fair, because that's what all the really fun stuff was. With mine, I got scrambled after this. So, absolutely. We'll chat more off air as such, if I'm not on air, about trying to link up this more and more, man, because it's been really fun. Podcast on your own is good, but I get bored of my own voice sometimes, and no doubt people don't listen to just me talk, you know. And it's not just, obviously, it's for us against networking kind of things, but it's getting other perspectives. And I think from having this link, I hope we can, a bond we can kind of build, hopefully, at the time, across the Atlantic, that you can bring your take and my take together, and people can really benefit from those things. So yeah, it's been a pleasure, mate. So again, super thank you again, my friend. I'm going to stop recording now, and then we'll just do a quick goodbye to you on my own. All right, bud. So again, super thanks. And we'll do this again soon. Ciao.
Yeah.
So thank you for tuning in. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to the episode. Again, I apologize for my technical difficulty in that center, and kind of we were lost track of where we were. I'm not the best with technology, so again, forgive me. But it was really fun to make the episode and like have a guest on to try and chew the fat a little bit with people. I hope you learned something and listened to stuff. And obviously follow Teddy as well, because he's a great guy and he's got some great information and a great coach. So we're going to hopefully do that a bit more often. Me and Self and Teddy will jump together a bit more and have more specific topics to kind of talk about, go through and work around to help people out. So if you have any questions or any comments, please kind of leave them in the podcast so we can answer them. And hope you've learned something. Really fun to make it. Season 3, episode 1. This will come out more often, hopefully. But look out for me and follow us for more information.